This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting today with 94-year-old John Wagenhals of Sanger, California. He still drives his prized Red Thunderbird and cuts his lawn on his riding mower. Those vehicles a little different from the B-17s he was flying in as a bombardier during World War II, or those big B-29s he served in during the Korean War. We're going to get to that, but we left off with Mr. Wagenhals coming home after completing those 32 missions over Europe in World War II.
When I got back, and it looked like the war was going to go on for a while, I applied for pilot training. So I started pilot training, and I got into what they call pre-flight again. And I was in Georgia, Maxwell Air Force Base, and the war ended. I talked with Marie, and she says, I want you to come home. Come on home, honey, you know. So, well, what could I do? So I says, okay, I'm out of here, you know. Because if I stay in, the deal was that you go through the pilot training, and then you are committed for 3 years after that. And so that meant basically 4 years. I wasn't really ready for that either, you know, and then a little persuasion from her, then I'm on my way home.
I don't hear any regret in your voice about that either. You mentioned the war coming to an end, and you find out while you're there in Georgia. Was that a big deal to you? Because you'd had a lot to do with what happened there. You had certainly done your part. What did it mean to you to find out that this war was over and that your side had emerged victorious?
I was glad for all the people that were still fighting, really, and especially the guys on the ground. Oh, they were having such a terrible time around the Berlin area and the cold that they were enduring. And it was just a terrible time for those guys. And at least when we got home, everything was fine. But I was so happy for them that this thing was over. They didn't have to endure this any longer.
And when you did honor Marie's wishes and come back to California and leave the Air Force at that time, or I guess it was still the Army Air Corps until 48, did you think you were ever going to be up in the sky in a bomber again?
No. I didn't. I did stay in the reserves, but it seemed like everything was going along pretty well. You know, it was 46, 47, 48, and everything still looking pretty good. And 49, and then when they invaded South Korea, you know, and that kind of thing, it started all over again. And it wasn't long they called my number again, back in the service in 1950, and trained then in B-29s, so which was kind of nice, you know, in a nice airplane. And then it wasn't long. I was sent over to Okinawa, and I was put on a crew and flying from Okinawa to Korea. And I was over there for almost a year. That included somewhere around 50 missions. Most of them were not too bad. They were long. Some of them were very long. I think some were long, like 15 hours. Most of them run around 10 hours and that. But actually, it was not as dangerous as World War II in the sense that the enemy was, you know, the strength that they had over in Germany and the equipment that they had. But they finally got to us pretty good.
Well, I did see a photo of a hole in your bomb bay doors.
Yeah, that's right.
What happened there?
I don't know. There weren't many of us that went. I think there were only about 12 airplanes. We were going to bomb an air base, and that was pretty close to the Russian border. And the Russians actually were flying the Korean airplanes, so that they were Russian airplanes with Korean markings.
But Russian pilots.
And Russian pilots, that's right. So anyway, this one particular day, they just swarmed all over us. We had 12 airplanes. Four of them went down right just before the target. They were hit bad, and we got hit too, but our lead crew guy, he got hit, he went down. And I think there were, of the 12 of us, only two of us actually made it back to Okinawa. And we had the damage with the bomb bay doors, and I was able to get back up there and wire them up so that they wouldn't be too much drag on the airplane. And so we were able to make it back home. But there were two of us got back home, but about three or four of them, they landed safely at airports in South Korea. And then there was a number that just, they're gone. That's all, they're gone.
It could have been you.
If he'd been a foot higher, he would have got us.
And what did he hit you with? The cannon on the nose of his plane?
It was a cannon shot, you know, and he hit sort of at the top of the bomb bay doors, which just kind of split them right down the middle. If it had been another 2 feet higher, it would have been right in the bomb bay section. And I don't know what would have happened. And I don't know if the bombs would explode or not, but I kind of doubt that. But anyway, it would have damaged the airplane enough to cause it unflyable.
Inches matter, huh?
Yes. Yes, they do. Yeah. Inches matter.
And you mentioned very nonchalantly that you went down there and wired those doors. What did that entail? Did you have to go out on a catwalk? I mean, how did you do that? What did that entail?
Yeah, there's a catwalk about a foot wide. I had one guy, he was standing behind the bomb bay and, you know, kind of watching out for me, if you will. I had to lay down on the catwalk, reach down and pull up one section of the bomb bay. And we have wires that are connected to the bomb, which keeps the bomb safe until the wire pulls away from the bomb. And then these wires, they stay in the aircraft, and they're about 3 feet long. So I was able to get enough of those together to pull up the bomb bay door, the half sections at a time, wire them up, hold them up into place pretty decently, I guess. I did that for all of the different sections of the bomb bay and got them up in place. And so we thought, well, with that, we probably can make it home okay. Otherwise, it'd be too much drag on the airplane, and we'd have to land either in Japan or down in Southern Korea. So we got them up okay, and again, you know, nothing seems like a big deal until it's over with. You know, you do what you have to do, and you go ahead and do it.
I'm wondering if any of those industrial arts students you had at Fresno City College in all the years, or the teachers and students you oversaw when you were an administrator in Fresno Unified, ever heard the story of you lying on your belly on a catwalk with some interesting scenery going down below and probably a whole lot of wind at your face too, huh?
Yeah, and going pretty fast trying to get out of there, you know, so there was no question about that. We probably dumped the bombs a little bit before we should have, maybe, because we were getting shot up and everybody else was getting shot up. And so we dumped the bombs and trying to get the hell out of there. You get out as fast as you can, so I guess it meant to the pilot, drop the nose a little bit of that airplane to get some speed going. So we did that, and we got out of there, and we got shot at it several times on our way out of there, but we got missed. Those guys don't always hit you and they're shooting at you, and that's good news. But anyway, we got out of there okay.
Well, and I guess what I wonder, and maybe there's no way to answer, is you talk about them shooting at you and missing. Might they have had a better chance at hitting you if you hadn't done that to the bomb bay doors to help your aerodynamics?
It's questionable, I suppose. You know, I really don't know. I don't think I could answer that, but it seems like we would be going slower probably than we would otherwise, which might make it a little easier target. I don't know, but we could see them flashes coming at us and missing, but there's nothing you can do, you know, because you see the flash and it's just that quick way the shell is at you or past you or whatever, or hit you, one or the other. So there's nothing you can do about that.
I know you recently had the opportunity to go to Washington, D.C. to see the World War II Memorial, but also the Korean War Memorial. And I imagine on a plane full of World War II vets, you were one of the few that actually served in both of those wars. What was that experience like for you? What did it mean to you to visit those two spots?
I visit those two spots, of course, very emotionally. I kind of got over that, and then I saw the Air Force Memorial, and that was euphoric. I mean, that was so beautiful. That just took away all the worries I ever had. You know, I just thought that was such a beautiful memorial, you know. It just looks like three airplanes taking off and away they go.
You mentioned getting emotional. Is that because you thought of the guys who didn't come home and maybe you could have been in their place? I mean, I don't want to put thoughts in your head or words in your mouth, but what did that do to you?
It's part of that, but I think more than that was I watched so many of those guys break down. You know, that we were on the Honors flight, I actually start crying and doubling up. And, you know, you just feel so sorry for them. And they're just reliving some of the things that they went through during the World War II. And most of them happened to be Army guys, you know, on the flight I was on. I think there was only one other Air Force guy on it. And I felt so sorry for those guys because they were just having a really tough time visiting those memorials.
I know you spent a good chunk of your life in education. And, you know, I think about the younger generations of your family and of all of our families, those of us who weren't alive during World War II or certainly the Korean War. What do you think we need to know about what happened then, what you guys did, why you did it, and why we need to remember it today?
All these things have a beginning and they have an end. And what happens in between, I don't know, it can be horrible. And in some cases, you know, it's only the right thing to do, as bad as it is. The winner, of course, always feels bad for the loser. It's just terrible to see what destruction takes place and why it had to happen. And the sad part of it is it's still going on. You know, it doesn't seem like it wants to stop. I don't know. I just can't understand the politics of all of this. You know, it seems like that seems like there should be a resolution of some sort where we don't have to keep doing this kind of thing. I get upset about it sometimes, but nothing I can do.
When I imagine some of that, when you say you feel upset, that you guys probably believed that if you finish this job, that hopefully no one would have to take up that kind of task again, right?
Well, that was the thought at the time, but it didn't last long.
Well, I'm sure we could sit here talking for hours, and if there's anything else that comes to mind for you, let me know. But I just want to say before I forget, thank you for serving our country. Thank you for telling us about it. What's your secret to staying so young? Because you're 94, but you don't look it, you don't sound it. Is there something you can share with the rest of us to give us some hope?
The only thing I could share with you, which is impossible now, would be my mother. She lived to be 97, and she was just as sharp when she died as she had been all her life. She's got the genes.
What are you most proud of, and what are you most thankful for?
Well, I'm thankful to still be here, for one thing. You know, and having gotten through that, proud. I don't know, I just feel like I did what everybody else did. You know, I don't feel any different about that, and I don't talk about it in a heroic sense or anything like that. Sometimes I just lay it out like it is, and that's as far as I want to go with it. So they can take it or leave it.
Well, and I think that attitude has come through today. Before we go, you know, I do tend to bend our listeners' ears about Honor Flight a lot, reminding them that wherever they live, there is an Honor Flight affiliate nearby hoping to give every World War II veteran who wants to visit the National World War II Memorial a chance to do just that. I know you got rained on a bit on your trip to Washington, D.C. from Fresno, but I saw you there with your Central Valley Honor Flight hat on, welcoming back our next group of veterans after that. So what do you tell people when they notice that hat and they ask you about Honor Flight?
Oh, that's great. It's really great, really great. And I'm so hopeful that some of these people that haven't signed up for it do, you know, get a chance to go. Seeing them is just part of it. Being with these guys, that's really the nice part of it, you know, is being with all those guys. They're so humble and so great. And I don't know, some of those guys are living so hard right now. You know, we had one guy that celebrated his 99th birthday on the... So that was really neat. And
did you find that it was easier to talk about what you did in the war because you knew all those guys went through similar things?
Yeah, and at the same time, it seemed like, you know, they all kind of downplay what they did. Yeah. There's nobody bragging about anything, not at all. And so I really respect them for that. They're not blowing themselves up to be something that they're not. Yeah, and so really wonderful bunch of guys, you know, and I'll never forget them. Never.
Well, I know they all feel the very same way about you. John Wagenhals, 94 years old. You can find photos of him then and now on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page or at hometownheroesradio.com. Don't forget about the contest there where you can win 4 free tickets to Universal Studios Hollywood. We're out of time this time. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you'll join us again next time and that you'll let these stories from our veterans always remind you that freedom is not free.